Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi jana balabha girivada thare. Gopi jana balabha girivada thare. Yashodhanandana Vraja Janarandana Yashodhanandana Vraja Janarandana Yamuna Tira Manachari Yamuna Tira Panachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivaradhari Gopi jana balabha girivada dhari Yashoda nandana bhaja janarandana Yashoda nandana Raja Jana Randana Namuna Tira Vanna Chari Yamuna Tira Vanna Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Radha Madhava Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Shripa Paramahamsa Prabhupada Gacharya Ashtotara Sata Shishimad Esi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vinda Ki Namacharya Shidhari Das Thakur Ki Premsa Koho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pravanita Ananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasri Kovar Bhakta Vinda Ki Shishi Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Shri Vrindavan Dhamma ki jai, Navadip Dhamma ki jai, Ganga Mayi ki jai, Jamuna Mayi ki jai, Tulsi Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, All glories of some of the devotees, all glories of some of the devotees, all glories of some of the devotees, glories of Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga.
Okay, so first of all, I thank you very much for this invitation. Obviously, Gornitai, it's a good thing I can't see them, because if I see them, I might not be able to get through the discussion. So better that I'm over here and they don't see me either, because they did kick me out of here eventually. And, you know, in Los Angeles, I go to, Prabhupada said somewhere, he said, if you have any problems, you go to Sri Sri Gornitai and you pray, my dear sirs, here is the problem. And you tell them your problems and Gornitai will help you. So many times I've gone to Gornitai in Los Angeles and I prayed, dear sirs, here's my problem. I'm stuck here in L.A. I don't want to be here. I want to go back to Florida. And then I go to Rukmini Dwarkadish and I say, why are you keeping me here? Why won't you let me go? Like, Rukmini Dwarkadish are different than Radhasham. Or these Gornitai are different than the Gornitai in Los Angeles. I think, oh, this is Los Angeles deities. These are the Alachua deities, and, you know, thinking in those sectarian ways. But, you know, it's all, you're praying to the same Gornitai. There's no difference. But I always find that somewhat amusing. And I also find it amusing that back in the old days, and I have to use that term for even though there's many young people here, but you get older and there's no other way to refer to it. You know, you can say, well, back in 1972 or whatever, which I can't remember very well anyway. But so I say the old days, you know, we were always competing, little old Gainesville, when we started, and we'd go to these ISKCON gatherings, wherever they might be, and they'd say, oh, where are you from? I say, oh, we're from Gainesville. And they go, whatville? Where? They never heard of it. They had no idea. I said Hogtown and some of the other names that Gainesville was formerly known by. And of course, it's well known that when Prabhupada came here, he very quickly referred to it as this very remote place. I'm very happy. But he said, I'm very happy to see so many boys and girls chanting and dancing and following Lord Chaitanya in this very remote place, thousands of miles from the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And now as I wander around, I see all these old Miami book distributors living in Gainesville, living in Alachua, and all these Atlanta devotees living here. And I say, well, I guess if there's some kind of divine justice or, you know, some kind of reconciliation, maybe that's it. Like Tamahara was Miami. Madan Mohan, Mahavir, Nartaka Gopal, Vaishnavananda was Atlanta, Adidev, when Garga Muni, who's the first devotee who came here, as probably everyone knows by now, he was a sannyasi at the time, and he followed Prabhupada's simple formula, went out to the Plaza of the Americas and sat under a tree and chanted Hare Krishna, and then gave a lecture, and then gave out some fruit afterwards. And that was his simple formula. But right before that, him and Brahmananda and Vishnu John had been living in Miami, in Peacock Park, in Coconut Grove, which was the big hippie place where all the young people hung out. They were literally living in the park, and they got caught in a hurricane in the park. But at a certain point, another ISKCON devotee showed up to be the temple president there, and they split, and Garga Muni came here, Brahmananda went to Tallahassee, and Chayavana Swami, who I understand is back in the area here somewhere, he came from Tallahassee, and Vishnu John went to Austin, and Adidev is my cousin in that sense, that, you know, we joined in parallel universes, me from Garga Muni, him from Vishnu John, but they had been teamed up right before they split. So I always consider Austin like our cousin temple or sister temple or something along those lines. But anyway, yeah, that was truly the preaching in those days was extremely, they hitchhiked everywhere they went. And I went through, because I'm trying to piece this all together from 40 years ago, and it's very difficult. But at a certain point, and this will back up in a sense, the southeast zone was a Gornitai zone in 1975. We had Gornitai, Miami had Gornitai, Atlanta had Gornitai. And they were all the Gornitai, the Atlanta Gornitai and the Miami Gornitai are from the same mold from Nobbedly. They were made from the same exact mold. So they're actually twins or quadruplets or whatever they, you know, but they came from the same mold in Nobbedly. I ordered the deities from Gargamuni because by that time, when Gargamuni was first here, he got here in November of 1970. And so some of us would go out to the plaza every day and listen to him and said, you know, okay, this is pretty good stuff. And myself and Pushtakrishna, at night, we'd go try to find him. And so one night we'd find him in an attic. Another night we'd find him in somebody, you know, in somebody's backyard. One night it was very cold. We found him in a utility room next to the water heater to keep warm. And that was the first time I saw the Bhagavatam. He had the brown Bhagavatams, Prabhupada's original brown Bhagavatams, and he had it on a little mat, and I looked at it, and I saw the Sanskrit, and I go, oh. It was like a mystical experience just looking at these original Bhagavatams. But finally, having Jewish origins, I said, I can't take this anymore to Gargamuni. You just move into my apartment. Just come stay with me. Just because I couldn't stand it anymore, that he was just bouncing around from place to place every night. So he came over there to, I wrote the address down, 1915 Northwest 2nd Avenue, in case anybody's interested. It was a little duplex. I can't believe, I went by there and I can't believe how small it was, but within 2 months, we had 100 students a day coming over there for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And this was before social media. We didn't have Twitter, we didn't have internet, we didn't have Facebook, we didn't have any of that stuff. All what Gargamuni's social media was is he had learned how to cook from Prabhupada because he was one of the original 11 devotees in 2nd Avenue up in New York, and he had been personally taught to cook by Prabhupada. And of course, Gargamuni taught Gayatri, and that's how Gayatri got on her way to become such a great cook, because she was his, you know, right-hand man right there in the kitchen. But when he would make the dal, he would put the ghee in the ladle with all the spices and wait till it caught on fire. You know Gargamuni. And then he would throw it in the pot and throw the cover on and we'd all run. Literally, I don't make up these stories because the truth is much more exciting and amazing than anything I could possibly. And so the chants would just explode and all the smoke would just go flying out the windows. We had to clean the kitchen like every other day because it was black. And I'd be coming back for class, and as the dal would drift through the neighborhood, you'd see all these students just running to the Krishna house. And I'd be coming back from class across University Avenue. I see all these people just running because as soon as they smelled the dal, the chants, their taste buds just became uncontrollable, and they just came running to the Krishna house. That was the first Krishna lunch. Wasn't on the campus, it was at that little house. And by February, he had 15 people living in the living room, men and women, with a sannyasi. And the others were living in tents in the backyard. And one thing I'll say about Gargamuni is when he was a sannyasi, he was really a sannyasi. But when he wasn't, he wasn't. That's all you need to know about Gargamuni. But I'm always indebted to him, of course, because he's the first devotee I ever met. And if it wasn't for him and Kridananda Maharaj later on, who was the first real temple president here, then I wouldn't even be here today. Not even possible. But after 2 months, we had all these people coming, and Gargamuni had written to Prabhupada. Prabhupada knew he had the college program going here. He said, oh, yeah, that's great. We should do this, preaching to the students in every college campus. And then one thing I saw in a letter to Rupanuga, another quote, when Rupanuga was at GBC, he was making a report, and he said, yes, this prasadam distribution program is very good. He said, the students have never tasted this kind of food. So that was his quote. He said, they will all be attracted. So you must keep it going. So so there was a lot of encouragement in that respect, and Prabhupada knew about all the success we were having here. But in January, he wrote a letter to Gauri Muni. And I, the reason I'm bringing this up is because when I was trying to reconstruct the history of Gaur Nitai, and it all does fit in, I had to go back and look at a lot of letters. And then I was reading Gauri Muni's letters from Prabhupada, and I got that. There was a letter that came in January of 1971, and Prabhupada told him, go to East Pakistan. He told Brahmananda to go to West Pakistan. And so Prabhupada was very careful about that. But his letter is one of the most, just the most, you know, inspirational insights into Prabhupada's global strategic thinking, how Prabhupada was thinking, that we were thinking, oh, look at this program. We have all these devotees and students and prasadam, and this is great, and we're going to, you know, Prabhupada's going to love this, and we're going to be all recognized by Prabhupada and this and that. And Prabhupada writes Gauri Muni a letter and says, yeah, I'm here in India, and things are going very well, and we're being very nicely received. But sometimes people ask me, do you have something in Pakistan? And Prabhupada says, and he thought to himself, why not? And then he says, there's somebody in Pakistan already preaching, but he's not in our line. He was some other non-Chaitanya Sampradaya or something. So, and he said, we want the real things. We want somebody from Lord Chaitanya's line to be there. And then he says to Gauri Muni, he said, if you can get something started in Pakistan, the whole world will take notice. The whole world will notice. And he said, this will be a very great service to who. First of all, it'll solve that false partition problem between India and Pakistan that Prabhupada never liked to begin with. And he said, this will be a great service to humanity. This will be a great service to Lord Chaitanya's mission, and I will be very pleased. And then he told him how to do it. He said, you have been doing this sannyas, traveling and preaching with Vishnujana and Brahmananda, because they had been hitchhiking all around the country before they got to Miami, like real sannyasis, I guess, are supposed to do, just be wandering mendicants. So say, you have been trained up in sannyasi, so you are ready to do this. And if you need the money, just I will give it to you if you cannot raise the funds yourself. And so in another letter, when Prabhupada was following up, he knew there was trouble in Pakistan. He knew there was problems going on over there with the Bangladesh civil war, and he said, you should think about this very seriously and be very careful. And if you don't want to go, I will understand. But if you can go, that would be very nice. And so Gauri Muni made a decision, obviously, to see how much Prabhupada wanted this. Despite everything that he was doing here, Prabhupada was always thinking light years ahead of us. He was thinking globally. If you can do something in Pakistan, the whole world will notice. And just think about that. Pakistan, what it is today. It's the breeding ground of Islamic jihad. The worst terrorists in the planet are born and bred in Pakistan. It's the birthplace of terrorism. And if you look into that Mumbai terrorist attack with they have the phone calls between the Pakistani secret service and the terrorists in Mumbai. It's just like astonishing. But they got caught in the middle of the Bangladesh civil war. They almost were murdered by the Pakistani army. And I actually did some research, and I won't get too far off the point here, but I did some research on my own when I saw that. And there was a quote from a Pakistani general in the Asia Times that, yes, he was given instructions to his men, to his army. Yes, if we slaughter 3 million of the Bengalis, then they will not give us any more trouble. Just go in and slaughter them, murder them. That was what he wanted to do. And they did it. They tried to do it. There was one Hindu dorm at the University of Dhaka, and they murdered every student in that dormitory, 600 or 700. And Pushta Krishna and Gauri Muni walked right into it. But Prabhupada had told them, go through America on American visa with your American passports. Don't go through India. And as they were about to get murdered by these Pakistani soldiers who had them at gunpoint, to the where at one point Bhargava Muni said to push to Krishna, put your hand in your bead bag, Paul, who was Paul at the time, we're going back to Godhead. They thought they were going to be shot. And then the last second, they saw they were Americans. Said, no, don't. No, they're Americans. Not that they're Hare Krishnas or blah, blah, blah. They're Americans, and they let them go. So that's Bhargava Muni's history. But the point is that, you know, as much as we may think we, our project, my project, you know, this is everything, this is great, Prabhupada was always thinking so much bigger, so much on such a bigger scale. And sometimes devotees refer to our, they say, our beloved spiritual master, our Srila Prabhupada. What do you mean, our Srila Prabhupada? You think Srila Prabhupada has one ISKCON? He has millions. He's preaching to billions of people throughout the material world. We're just like just one small little neighborhood of Prabhupada's mission. He's on another level, preaching on to everybody, to all the conditioned souls. Prabhupada belongs to everybody, not just us. He belongs to everybody, devotees, non-devotees. It doesn't make any difference. So anyway, when Bhargava Muni got to Calcutta later on after going to Kathmandu, where he had some problems, where Prabhupada told him another really wonderful quote, he says, yeah, you're having trouble, just chant Hare Krishna peacefully and gravely, and they will come. Just chant peacefully and gravely. Don't try to do too much. So Bhargava Muni had some, you know, ran into a few difficulties, but he did end up in Calcutta, and he became the president. And I know I ordered the Gaur Nitai from I ordered them from Bhargava Muni, and I just can't remember if I ordered them by mail. And I remember sitting with Bhargava Muni in Calcutta in his office overlooking the lake at the old Calcutta temple. And we were talking about the deities. And I was either giving him the money somewhat cautiously because I knew a lot more about Bhargava Muni by that time. He said, just give me the money and I'll take care of it. And I said, well, okay. I was a little cautious about that, you know. But it was either then, which I can't remember, 73, 72, 73. Or I did it by mail, and then later on I was asking him, where are they already, you know? But I know I was having a discussion with Bhargava Muni, and I do know that he was the one who ordered them. And they did come from the same place as the Miami and Atlanta Gaur Nitai in Navadvip, and they're made out of the 8 metals, bell metal, not just brass. They're composed of 8 metals, and they were made by the same deity maker in Navadvip is Atlanta and Miami. And Bhargava Muni is the one who finally came through and did it because he had a special place in his heart for this temple and this community. And he was really wonderful in the long run. If it wasn't for him, none of us would be sitting here right now. But in 1975, this whole zone was a Gaur Nitai zone. And Prabhupada went to Miami that year, and he went to Atlanta. In Miami, where I went down to Miami, and Prabhupada gave a lecture in the temple room, and he said he loved the Gaur Nitai deities. He loved them. And he said, he loved the Gaur Nitai deities in Miami. He said, these Gaur Nitai deities, these are all that you need. You don't need anything else. Later on, for some the householders, maybe you get something more. He said, but the Gaur Nitai, these are all you need. Now, Prabhupada had already come to Gainesville in 1971 and spoke at the university, and that's well known around here in this community, on the Plaza of the Americas. And when he came here, we only had a painting of Panchatattva that Gayatri painted. She wasn't even one of the artists, you know, Bhardwaj and Jadarani and all those. She was just painted on her own, but she was a tremendous artist. She was very talented, and she painted a Panchatattva, and we had on a heater or something in the living room when Prabhupada came. He just went prostrate right in front of Panchatattwa, didn't give it a second thought, didn't even look and say, what is this, you know? Who has painted this? What is this? He just immediately hit the floor, bowed down, offers obeisance. The prophet, of course, he understood these things. He obviously sees Krishna everywhere and was seeing Krishna everywhere. But he did say, these Gaudiya deities are all that you need. By the time he got to Atlanta in 1975, and he saw the deities there, that's a famous speech because it was very short because he couldn't finish. He said, you're taking care of these Gaudiya so nicely, and that's about as far as he got. He choked up. He went into some kind of transcendental ecstasy, and he couldn't speak any further. So the beauty of Gaudiya is that we all know they don't accept offenses. They're the easiest and the most merciful deities to worship. And when Prabhupada said that in Miami, that's is all you need, I was very happy. I said, that's great, because personally, just me and my neophyte consciousness, I said, I don't want to get these other deities because I'm going to go to hell, you know. If I start worshiping these deities, I'll end up in hell by the time it's all over. And you're going to have so many pujaris and so many cooks. And the Gainesville program at that point, and it was only Gainesville at that point, 1974 or 75, was based on four things. Studying and preaching Prabhupada's books, because Sridhananda Maharaj had been the temple president when Gaga Muni left in February, late February, March of 71, he put me in charge of the temple. I became the official temple president. I was in the movement for 2 months. I wasn't even close to being initiated. So eventually we got kicked out of that place because so many people were coming. The neighbors all complained. There were people all the way out down to the edge of the street. It was really a scene there. And so we got kicked out. And then we moved to Southwest. I've got the address. You get old, you can't remember these things unless you write them down. 1102 Northwest, Southwest 2nd Place and 2nd Street. It's close by downtown. It's not there anymore. It burned down. But that's the place that Prabhupada visited. So we went there, and then I talked to Sasarupa, and I said, no, I can't take this anymore. This isn't working. You got to send somebody. And that's when Sridhananda Maharaj, not Maharaj at the time, and Ananga Manjari came, and then everything, you know, immediately sprang to life again. And that's how we got Prabhupada there. We got the money from the university. At that time, I had been in a very powerful... I had been a student at the university, and I had a lot of fraternity brothers. I was in a very big fraternity, and it was very powerful. When I joined, one of my fraternity brothers was president of the student government. Another one was editor of the Florida Alligator. Another one was chancellor of honor court. And the other one was chairman of the Speakers Bureau. So I went to him and I said, well, you know, we want to bring this guy, our spiritual master, to Gainesville. And we want you to pay him $1,000 to come. And he said, oh, great, great, great. Oh, that's fine. So then he put me in touch with somebody from the student government. He was the executive, but I had to go to the student government. And there were some classic battles that we had where I was pounding my fist on the table and yelling and screaming and slammed the door and walked out, went back to the temple, and I said to Farina, I said, forget it, there's just a bunch of dogs. And that's how we talked in those days. Meat-eating karmic demons, dogs, animals, you know. So I said, forget it, it's not going to happen. I tried, and so we were in Guru Puja one day, and I got a call on the telephone, and it was this same girl that I had been fighting with. I said, you're paying thousands of dollars to Dick Gregory and all these dogs to come here and speak, and they can't help anybody, and they won't liberate one soul, and you have a pure devotee, and he can liberate this whole town. And I was like, you know, we were a little fanatical back then, you know. And it was her on the phone. She says, okay, we're going to give him money. And I was speechless, and I said, okay. I hung up the phone and went, I remember telling Hina Namara, she was leading Guru Puja, hey, give us the money. And his jaw literally hit the floor. Because we only had about 2 weeks to get ready. Prabhupada was on a tour of all these temples up north. Mahavir is my second cousin because he got initiated kind of like up in north in Detroit. Prabhupada made a tour of all these northeast temples and they came down here. And a lot of devotees at that time got initiated on that tour. Mahavir got initiated in Detroit. I can't remember who else, but I've met some devotees. But anyway, so I was very glad to hear when Prabhupada said that about Gornitai. And so that's what we were based on, reading, studying, preaching the philosophy, obviously distributing prasadam. There was a third one. Oh, yes. Book distribution. Distributing Prabhupada's books. Now, I mentioned this before. I think it was here a few years ago. This farm, which we bought in 1977, was bought on the profits from book distribution. Because in those days, we had, you know, when we were over there on... See, I can't even remember it for one minute. That's like Prabhupada says, you know, we think we're God, but we can't even remember what we were doing yesterday at this time. What to speak of 5 minutes ago on Northwest. Okay, after the Southwest second place where Prabhupada came, there was a period which I won't go into where things were somewhat politically turbulent in Florida, and. The next real temple was at 1102 Northwest 3rd Avenue, and it was a duplex. And that's when a bunch of the next wave of devotees joined. Harinam, Shamakunda, Daneshwara, Chandri, who else? Akadasi, a lot of devotees that aren't here now. Akadasi, Dronacharya Guru. I mean, they just came out of nowhere. Swaha. They just walked in the door. Somehow. And so I sent them out on book distribution. They came back one night with all this money. And I couldn't believe it because when I went out to the Gainesville Mall in Sankirtan, well, now the mall was not what it is today. It was this place on 13th Street, on I think maybe 23rd. It was just a Sears and it was an outdoor parking lot. And I'd come back. We'd go out there all day in July and August and come back at night with $20. And Gayatri and Mahavir was here too. Mahavir would come back loaded, you know, no matter where he went. He would come back with a lot of money. That was very depressing to see because it wasn't our money. I think he was working for Rupanuga by then. And so I was trying to figure out where we're going to get this money. And all these, one day all these devotees came to the temple and they went out on book distribution. And sure enough, they distributed all these books and all this money started to come in. So we were on. Damn, this is frustrating. I got to just keep it to the same page, you know, because we were still on second place and second. Oh no, that's the 1102 Northwest 3rd Avenue, just on the other side of 13th Street from where the temple is now. So we started off on the bottom of the duplex. It was a top bottom, and you know, in a month or two, we had the whole building. And then Rupanuga used to come. And for those of you who didn't know Rupanuga back then, he was like a revolutionary. He was the real thing. I mean, he was this revolutionary. He was trying to make a revolution on college campuses. He was an incredible preacher. Another one of the original 11 disciples from Second Avenue. I always looked up to him as being the Maharaj Yudhisthira of the Hare Krishna movement. He was like a saintly king who was such a fatherly figure. And he would come on his bus. He had a bus, and he would come in those days and park it on the side of the street. And he'd have Mangal Arti down there, and of course we had Arti in the temple. And there was this lady across the street that hated us, and she was always screaming out her window, "Shut up, shut up." And so finally we got kicked out of that place. And we moved to some apartments. And I don't remember where the apartments are. I can't find them anywhere. I've looked several times, but I don't know where. So we were in four or five apartments at this place. Still doing book distribution. And so it had been a long time since I had ordered Gorney Time. I had ordered them months, if not a year before. And that's why I say, when I saw Garga Muni in India, I know I was asking him, where are they? What's going on? Oh, he's just cheating us, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so we were in these apartments, and I got a call one day from Jacksonville, and somebody from the port, and they said, you have a shipment here. And they said, we're not expecting anything. What could it be? So I sent a van, and I said, all right, go see what it is. And then in the back of my mind, I said, nah, can't be. I thought, maybe, nah, it's not, that couldn't happen. And so the van came back, it was two big crates. I said, oh no, this can't be real. This is not happening. And so we're in these apartments, we're like bag of gypsies in exile somewhere. And we open them up in the living room and take all the straw, and there they were, right there in our living room. I said, oh my God, what are we going to do? Now, I can't remember, what happened after that was like a whirlwind. It was just like it's like a blur, because the deities came and we said, oh, we have to go get a temple. We have to go find a temple somewhere. So we looked at all over the city, everywhere, up and down, and then we found Depot, which was over there on the back of Sorority Row. It was only a mile from campus. And beautiful dormitory, big trees, two buildings. And within 2 or 3 months, we had Depot after the DD's coming. And then we immediately started the preparations for the installation, the Gorney Tai DD's, to install Gorney Tai. And I don't remember much. I know Rupa Nuga did the ceremony. I know that because he was our GBC. So he did the ceremony. I know that Gayatri and maybe Shrunti and Sharmapriya and the whole crew, and there might have been, and there were devotees from other temples up there helping us too, try to get the temple ready, et cetera, et cetera. And Parma sent me a picture of sitting in the temple room with all these devotees and said, he said, maybe this will help you remember. And I looked at this picture and I did not recognize one person in that picture. I had no idea who these people were. I said, I've never seen these people. So anyway, I can't remember it all. But we did have the installation, and it was wonderful because by that time, we had started to bring the prasadam over to the campus every day. So when we got Gorney Tai, and in those days, again, we didn't have the outfits from India like these gorgeous outfits. They were handmade. And we'd buy the saris in India, go to Bombay and all the shops and buy these really beautiful wedding saris. And then we go up to New York, and we buy all these jewels and ornaments. And then the ladies would hand sew every jewel onto the saris. And they were gorgeous outfits. I posted an old picture I found on Facebook a few months ago, and it was, I just came across it, and it was just magnificent. Because I wanted these Gorney Tai, because I wanted this to be a preaching. Our mission was to preach to these students. And so we adjusted the schedule. We had an 11 o'clock arti offering instead of noon, so that we could offer everything to Gorney Tai, and then we'd take it right off the altar, load the van with the bins, and go right out to the plaza with that prasadam. Same prasadam that had been on the altar. So it was all didi, I mean, subjis with sour cream and ghee and rice and puris or japatis and I mean, you know, it was like, you know, sometimes other people from other temple recently, whose name I won't mention, but he was from Canada. He was a good-looking guy. Mahavir knows him. First name begins with a U. He was president of Chicago for a while. So something came up on Facebook, and he said, yeah, you remember in India one year where everybody got sick and blah, blah, blah. And I said, no, I never got sick in India because I never ate when I went over there because I had to lose weight somehow, and that was a good way to do it. And so I never got sick, but I remember everybody else being sick. And then we started talking about prasad, and we said, oh, yeah, oh, Chicago had the best Sunday feast in the whole movement. And I just couldn't resist. I said, Uttama, I'm you. Uttama, I said, our 4 o'clock offering was far and away better than every other Sunday feast or festival feast anywhere in the movement, our 4 o'clock offering. Because until you had one of Gayatri's crispy on the outside, soft and succulent on the inside, cauliflower pakoras, and garunga potatoes, which she invented in Dallas when they ran out of yogurt, she put all this ghee and sour cream in it instead, and all these spices, and they were all yelling at her, what are you doing? Speculation, mental speculation, you know? That's where she invented. So between that and the tomato chutney, and Balavanta was with me in India one year. Well, I was in India, and all I could think about was cauliflower pakoras and tomato chutney. And I had to get out of there fast and get back. And that, I think that was the year that Prabhupada sent us to Bombay. Was that same year? Anyway, there were one year I was still, I'd think about it every year, and I remember the buses were going and everything else, and we had to go to Bombay, and I said, oh, no. Like, even though we were going to go be with Prabhupada in Bombay, and he was in his Nisringadev mode, it was like scary being with Prabhupada. When we had all the trouble in Bombay, Prabhupada was so angry that's all he could talk about. He was stunned that they wouldn't give us this occupancy permit. You know, Radhakrishna, the land where Krishna was born, he just couldn't believe it. He was on a rampage, so it was incredible. But I would have gone back for the prasadam if I'd had the opportunity, but Balavanta dragged me there, so I had no choice. And that doesn't include the hot chocolate eclairs. Now, I don't know, with real custard, without the eggs, of course. Until you've had a hot chocolate eclair with the sauce dripping on the top and the hot custard inside. So obviously, we had every Radha Damodar bus, every traveling Sankirtan party in the movement that was coming to Gainesville. They would go out of their way hundreds of miles to just come to one of our Sunday feasts. Because I can tell you, we had an incredible deity group. We worshiped those deities. We offered, you know, they were our preaching deities. They were our preaching deities. And that's where the plaza program, we'd offer the same prasadam to the students that we were offering to the deities, because we wanted people thought that, oh, the Hare Krishnas, oh, just give us money, you know, because we were really burning out the airports at that time, and Sankirtan was pretty heavy. So I said, no, we got to do something. We've got to do something. We're going to give back without any expectations of anything in return, just the eating prasadam. Read our books, hear our philosophy, come to the temple. That's all we care about. You don't have to give any money. We don't care. But, you know, we got donations. But we were doing so many books, it didn't matter. Because that's how we bought this farm. We had $40,000 in cash sitting in the bank. I didn't know what to do with it. I couldn't put it in the stock market. So I said, okay, we'll buy some land. And I took that money from Sankirtan and bought this land. Because we were, Krishna was just giving us all facilities. So, It was just on another level of the way these deities were taken care of. The outfits were just magnificent for Gorni Thai, and the prasadam that we were offering to them was just celestial. It was just in a different league altogether. And they were our heart and soul. They were everything to us. And obviously became very attached to them. So the thing about these Gorni Thai is that when you see them, you should think about preaching. You should think about spreading their mercy to others, going out, distributing books, distributing prasadam, because that's what these deities are. That's, you know, when I heard they went to the farm, I won't get into that. Krishna kicked me out of here for a reason. And that was probably one of them because I just felt that, you know, they are preaching deities. From the day they were installed till however long after. And they still are, you know. You can see they're just, as Bhagavanta was saying to me this morning, they're very powerful. They're very strong deities. They're not like, you know, Radha Krishna. They're not these, the beauty, the opulence. They're not like that. They're just like preaching. So I did see... one letter that I just felt I had to bring up. It was because when Mekonlal Maharaj was in Los Angeles a couple of years ago, he said some bad things about me in the temple room. And in his mind, he thought he was giving me a benediction. In my mind, he was cursing me. And he did in front of the deities. And he invoked the deities when he said that to me. He said, in 2 years, you'll be just like me. So that's either a benediction or a curse, depending on how one perceives it. So I thought I'd get back at Mekonlal a little bit. Who's my dear friend, by the way? I mean, we worked together in the legal office for many, many years, and he's just one of the most special people. But he did insult me. And so there's a letter to Mekonlal in 1970. Mekonlal was worshiping Lord Nityananda. He probably called him a Nityanandaite. And he would just worship Lord Nityananda. And so he told Prabhupada about this, and Prabhupada said, why are you doing this? What are you doing? Why are you being sectarian like that with this one just Lord Nityananda? And he explained how it all fits together and how that relates to his comments in 1975 that Gaur Nitya is really all you need. Because he said, by the mercy of the six Goswamis, by the mercy of Narottam Thakur, following the instructions of Narottam Das Thakur, you get the mercy of the six Goswamis to become detached from material sense gratification. And then tears will flow from your eyes, and you'll feel that when you see Lord Chaitanya, see Gaur Nitya, then, you know, tears will come from your eyes. And he said that there's a process that you have to follow. And the process is that he outlined was first the spiritual master, obviously. And then he said that goes up to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who Prabhupada characterized as non-different than Lord Nityananda in this letter. It's there on the archives in July, August 1970. And then from there, you get Lord Nityananda. And then by the mercy of Lord Nityananda, then you can get engaged in the service of Lord Chaitanya, of Lord Gauranga. And that will automatically please Radha and Krishna because Lord Chaitanya is Radha Krishna, as we all know. Lord Chaitanya came as Krishna in the mood of Radharani so he could taste that rasa, what Radharani was feeling. He's Radha Krishna something anga, that combination, I can't remember. What's that? Yeah. So Prabhupada explained how if you just worship Gaur Nitya, it's worshiping Radha Krishna. You're worshiping the other deities and by worshiping Lord Chaitanya. And therefore Prabhupada said, 1975, this is all you need. Can't make up my mind anymore. This is really torture. This is terrible, you know. I feel like a traitor to one or the other, you know, thinking, again, going back to this L.A. deities, Alachua deities, Bombay deities, et cetera, thinking they're all these separate ones. No, actually, they're all one and the same. I also go and try to negotiate with the deities. Well, I'll do this if you give me this, you know. Those kind of things, you know, like some kind of a low-life lawyer or something like that. Always negotiating, looking for a loophole in the instruction somewhere. But anyway, the end of this letter, Prabhupada said to Mukamal, he says something really remarkable. He says, do not go outside the jurisdiction of my instructions. And then he said, you have my will. You know what my instructions are. Follow the four regular principles. Chant 16 rounds a day. Go out on the street and chant. He included that specifically. Distribute my books and literatures. And then he said, in the case of Mukundal, I was in San Francisco, and he said, in San Francisco, you have the Ratha Yatra festival every year very gorgeously. And so that was his instructions. And then Prabhupada said, if you do that, he says, I like to read these things because it's Prabhupada's words directly without, anyway, I don't want to say anything wrong here. It's Prabhupada's original words, leave it at that, in these letters. And he said, I can assure you that if you follow my instructions as, can't read my own writing, as mentioned in this letter, he said, there is no doubt about it that through me, my spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur will be pleased, and through his mercy, Lord Nityananda will be pleased. Lord Chaitanya, and ultimately Radha Krishna will be pleased, and then your life will be successful. There is no doubt about it. So, there's, you know, you have a full house. It's not the real world. It's that social media world. That's not the real world. So sometimes we think, you know, oh yeah, we have 1,000 devotees, and look how big our festivals are, and yeah, Krishna consciousness is booming. But you go a few miles down the road, and there's people who've never heard of Krishna. They have no idea who Prabhupada is. So Prabhupada did want us to do that, and these Gaurinikai deities were one of the first deities that went out into the wilderness, so to speak, into some remote place that nobody had ever heard of. And by their mercy, you have the biggest community outside of India in the world. All these old Miami devotees that we used to compete with, Nartaka, Big Book Distributor, Mahavir, Kamahara, used to kick our butts in Sankirtan. They're all living here now. So I got, you know, I guess there is justice in the world of some kind or another. You can't beat, you know, if you can't beat them, join them, you know. So, but anyway, I was just fortunate. I was just fortunate. I look at these deities, and it's hard to not be, for me, it's hard to not be affected by them, because Gaurinikai, everywhere, they're in a special category. And we all know that. We all know that that Radha Krishna and the other deity worship is for householders. We need it. We need it for purification. But Prabhupada's spirit was, he bowed down to a picture of Panchatattva. But he did it for us, set up these temples for us. But these deities are the founders. They are the inspiration for everything that's here today, even though they're kind of off to the side where they're supposed to be. It's nothing, you know, but just remember that how many years they spent. Yeah. Ganga Gadi. Sweet Ganga Gadi. Now I'll tell you a story about Ganga Gadi and then I'll shut up. We, the Rolling Stones, were in Jacksonville one year for a concert. So we used to work the concert. So Ganga Gadi was a big Stones fan. She loved the Rolling Stones. So in those days, somehow, I don't know how they do it, but the devotees got inside the concert stadiums. They could, you know, get people to give them a ticket or something, but they go inside. And so she came back that night. So she got inside. She came back that night, and she was just like bubbling. She was euphoric. And she said, I'll never forget, she said, Krishna satisfies all desires. I got to hear the Rolling Stones and distribute Prabhupada's books at the same time. It was just one of the greatest Sankirtan stories I ever heard. So, yeah. So anyway, if anybody else can remember anything or something that you want to add to the whole thing, just go right ahead, because, you know, that's about all I can remember at this point. Go ahead, sure.
This is an anecdote, but in Roadshow, when we came through, I'm trying to remember whether or not she had done, did Prabhupada come before the Roadshow came?
The Roadshow actually came before Prabhupada came. But Roadshow came a lot. They were down here a lot.
Well, I think about the very first time.
I think it was before Prabhupada came.
Yeah, and I remember you yelling at Gayatri because she'd make such a huge 4 o'clock offering, and the entire Roadshow, which was about 20 devotees at least, she was cooking for everybody. You were flipping out because she was spending every dime of the temple money making this elaborate 4 o'clock offering, which 4 o'clock offering, I mean, okay, you had like 6 devotees, right? How many in the temple? But we had like 20-something in the Roadshow. Everybody was eating like madmen, you know, unlimited. And you were like flipping out.
Can't cook for all these people.
Gayatri was the real force behind this temple. She was the secret. She was our secret weapon. If it hadn't been for her, there wouldn't have been a Gainesville temple. And if you read Tamal Krishnamurti's book, the times that the Radha Damodar party was here, he has this famous, you know, story he tells that they were up at the Georgia border, and he called me up and he said, "We're going to be down there in 3 hours, and I'll bet you this or whatever that you guys can't make a feast." That, you know, yeah, so I mentioned that in the book. And so somehow we did it. We did put a feast together for, it was 2 or 3, 4 buses or something. It was like the big party, and him and Vishnu John were there. And all I remember is at the end, we were out in the backyard of Depot eating the feast out there. And first of all, Gayatri's Gauranga Bhaktas, if you ate them outside, you had to wear sunglasses. Because otherwise, the glare from the sun, you just couldn't find the plate. So, but we were out back, and by the end of it, Vishnu John was rolling on the ground, simultaneously moaning and laughing and holding his belly. He could not eat another speck. And he was just like delirious or something. I don't know what he was. I said, "Well, I guess we won that bet." But even Tamal Krishnamurti said we won the bet. He had to concede that we won that bet. But yeah, I don't remember what the bet was. Right. Oh, that. Well, what was the reward for doing that though? You make a bet and you win the bet. You're supposed to get something. I guess the prize money was just seeing all these Radha Damodar men wiped out on the lawn everywhere, like a phrase I used to use quite often, as the old Gainesville devotees like to remind me, a bunch of dead bodies out there, and they were just plastered, you know. I mean, they were wiped out. They just couldn't compete. So she's the one who. She's the one, all those students that took prasadam and all the devotees that she made and preached to. I if it wasn't for her, they would have all left because I was so mean and nasty and grumpy. you know, dead bodies, you know. So she put all those sannyasis and all those brahmacharis in their place. They would never... The women had a hard time in our movement. I can't believe that women in our movement that were here in the 60s and 70s are still here. And they're just beyond saintly. They're just, I don't know what they are. They're of some kind of rare souls that could put up with all that stuff. But after... But after Gayatri and Mangalananda made that Vyasa Puja case for Prabhupada up in New Vrindavan, that took about six brahmacharis to get up the hill on a palanquin, then, you know, that was her. She was locked in after that. That's what locked her in. And that's a funny story, too, because at that Vyasa Puja, Prabhupada took his little piece of the cake and he ate it. And then all the devotees literally dove on this cake like animals, just grabbing with their hands, stuffing it in their mouth, and then Prabhupada finished his little piece of cake and he looked up and he said, "Any more cake?" The whole thing was gone by then. And everybody had these cake, these cheeks puffing out with cake and everything else. And so she cut her reputation pretty early. Yeah.
And every temple was an oasis in the desert because sometimes we weren't in a temple for months eating triscuits and apples. And where the Mata's there, she's still out distributing books. So, but your temple was beyond all the other oases. And it really was the feast, but not just that. You go to the Sunday feast, the atmosphere was so astounding. It was so enlivening. It kept us going for months and months and months. And I thank you for being here and for all of your service, but especially Gayatri,
yeah.
Her prasadam, those eclairs, the garunga potatoes,
the
all of it, cheesecake. So my, you know, humble obeisances and gratitude to you both. And the other thing Gayatri did for me was we were going to go to the Mayapur Festival, I think, 76. So she just pulled me aside and she said that Pishima, Prabhupada's sister, was her dear friend, and she said, "You have to serve her." And she just told me exactly what to do and how to go to her. And because of her, I got to serve her for, you know, over a week. And one evening, Prabhupada was going to watch a play, and Pishima wanted to go to the play. And so I wounded by a sea of sannyasis.
He's surrounded by the Gestapo, you mean?
Yeah. And she started taking her cane and shooing him out of the way. And I was aghast. I was shy. And I was like, and then she was grabbing and pulling me along now, chasing them out of the way. And then she sprinkled her Ganga water. And she sat down right next to Prabhupada and pulled me down. And because of her, I'm internally, you know.
Well, you can thank Parma Karuna, too, because that's the year he was born. And that's why Gayatri didn't go to India.
Thank you.
But on the other hand, I got the brunt of Pishima's wrath.
Oh.
Because the ladies came to my door and they said, "Where's Gayatri?" And I said, "Well, I didn't bring her. She just had a baby."
Oh.
So they left. And then a little later they came back and said, knocked on the door, "Where's Gayatri? Pishima's crying. Where is Gayatri?
Oh.
Where is Gayatri?"
Krishna.
I said, "I will never go to India again without Gayatri." And the next year, we took Parma. I don't think he was 2 years old. And we had to take a trunk of baby food and formula. It was the worst trip I've ever had in my entire life. I had a miserable time carrying that trunk all over India from Vrindavan to Bombay and everywhere else. But I said, "I will never come. I'm never going to get on Pishima's bad side again. I would not take that chance." But I'm so happy to hear that you got... Her association was really special. She called Gayatri her daughter. And they had a special, I'm not just saying this, because we'd hit India and I wouldn't see Gayatri to the end of Mayapur because she'd be up there with Bhishma the whole time. So I'm glad. But also the traveling parties and all the Sangirtan devotees and buses, my attitude was that they're distributing Prabhupada's books, they're preaching, they're Prabhupada disciples, and okay, we lost a few devotees to the road show or this bus or that bus, but Krishna sent more to take their place. There was never any loss of diminution, and I just thought that the people out there distributing Prabhupada's books were the vanguard of this entire movement. And then in Vrindavan, I sometimes think I heard Prabhupada say things that later on I say, well, maybe I didn't hear that right, or maybe I'm just imagining this, but I do find out from time to time, like that quote about from Miami, these Gorni Thai deities are all you need. Well, Abhiram and I used to argue about that because Abhiram said, no, he didn't say, he said, these are all you need for now, but he qualified that later on. He did say, and Balavanta just read it, and he said, that's all you need for now. So this one quote, I know I heard Prabhupada say it in Vrindavan, and he said, even if you all leave, that is all right. Because we have distributed so many books, others will come to take your place. The damage is already done. So anybody that's just was distributing Prabhupada's books and going out there and doing that austerity, I just felt like I should be their servant and do whatever I could for them. So, and Gayatri, of course, you know, was put your money where your mouth is. Well, she did. Yeah, I thought she.
Thank you so much. Wonderful hearing about those days. Of course, I was in Miami during the time.
You were the enemy.
Well, but we came to Gainesville a couple of times, and I remember wonderful festivals, and we always appreciated coming here. I believe I was in Gainesville for the installation of Gorni Thai, but I cannot remember any details. It's amazing. You know, I mean, I kind of remember being there, but I don't remember the details of the installation. But I was going to say, I was in Miami when Prabhupada did make that. And the way I recall it, and our memories are fallible, is that Prabhupada definitely said, Gorni Thai is sufficient, it's all you need. And then he said something about, I remember him saying, later when you can become more advanced, you can have Radha Krishna. But he said, for now, definitely Gorni Thai was sufficient.
He certainly admired Gorni Thai in Miami and Atlanta. And that was enough to convince me that this is all we needed, all I needed for my service was Gorni Thai. I didn't want the burden of those offenses that you take on when you add Radha Krishna and Krishna Balaram, more Jagannath, etc. So, anyway, anybody else here at the time that can remember anything?
I met a man recently in Gainesville who said he met Prabhupada, and he owned a shopping plaza which he said hosted the first Krishna lunch program. Do you know about that? He's called James.
James?
His name is James. Yeah. Okay. I just wondered if you knew. He said the way he met the devotees was, they came to his flower shop and said, "My guru, our guru is coming, can you donate some flowers?" And he was thinking, these weirdos should just get out of my shop. So he told them to leave. And as they were leaving, a voice inside him, in his heart, said loudly, "Just do it." So he ran to stop them and called them back and said, "I've got to give you some flowers." And then he donated a bunch of flowers and then later on met Prabhupada.
There's a lot of people out there that met Prabhupada. There's somebody else that I was just talking to, I can't remember, that had met Prabhupada and had this all. Just somebody living on the outside somewhere, not even an initiated devotee or somebody. I can't remember who it is, but Prabhupada touched so many lives. There's so many students that still remember that were there when and heard Prabhupada on the plaza, because it must have been 600, 700, 800 came. in the middle of the summer, and they all remember. And I was thinking at the time, probably was lecturing on the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the Ashtanga Yoga system. I had no idea what he was talking about. I couldn't understand it. And first you do this, and then you do that, and then you go to up the Himalayas, and you give up this, and you got to give up. What is he? I don't know what is he saying. And I said, the students are never going to understand this. And then afterwards, all the students said, oh, that was the best thing lecture we ever heard. That was just wonderful, you know, that somehow Prabhupada just injected the knowledge, gave them the philosophy, and simultaneously gave them the ability to understand it. Somehow he had that power to do that, even though I couldn't even follow the whole lecture, but all these students were just so impressed, and they just fell in love with Prabhupada. They thought, oh, anybody that ever met Prabhupada, whoever they were, they walked away and said, this is the real thing. Prabhupada is the real guru. He's the real thing. All these other gurus that were there, and this yoga, that yoga, this meditation, everybody knew they were frauds. But anybody that ever met Prabhupada, they said, oh, he's the real thing. They walked away. This guy is really what he says he is. Not much more than that, but they knew he was the real deal. So that man knew that. He met Prabhupada too, right? He actually met him.
I got another little anecdote which confirms what you just said. Yogi Bhajan, I met Yogi Bhajan once. He said, he's a 6'6" Sikh, big beard, really impressive guy. He said, we are Kshatriyas. We like a little hanky-panky. But your Prabhupada, he is Paka Brahman.
But that flower shop man, from what Balabhanda told me about it, he actually came to the temple and had darshan with Prabhupada also. Prabhupada received him, and he had darshan. He's never been back since until you met him on door-to-door or wherever you met him. Balabhanda was telling me about that. But that's a whole other thing with Prabhupada when he came here. So I know it's late, so I'll let you all go. It's I have some other things to do here. But thank you so much. Tomorrow.